finally resting on the number 24.
Previously on 24.
Without you, Sangala has no leader. These people, they work for Dubaku, don't they?
Mr. Matobo, you've accessed the air intake to your safe room. You're now feeding in ammonium destroyed gas. If you do not open the door, you will die.
Olay.
Get him out of there. Get the woman too.
Mr. Taylor?
Sam.
I can't stay long. They killed Roger and made it look like a suicide.
Who are they?
I don't know who they are. They just said that they would kill me if I said anything. Roger was tasked with auditing the brokers in his department. It's all here. Account numbers, trading records, everything that he knew.
Roger was looking into things he shouldn't have.
You killed my son.
Tetradiazine, sir. It's a neuromuscular paralytic. Situation here is in control. You tracking Miss Roth?
Yeah.
Let me get her back to her apartment.
Ms. Roth.
Yes.
Henry Taylor sent me. Mr. Taylor's been looking into the matter you discussed. He believes you're in imminent danger. He wants me to place you in protective custody.
Larry, it's Renee. I've got a visual on them loading Matobo and his wife into a truck. Where the hell is SWAT?
They're still about 5 minutes out.
Truck. As far as I can tell, she's alone.
Damn you, Bauer, you son of a bitch.
Nichols wants her out of the way before we deliver Matobo.
Killer. Turn around. If you trust me, I will get you through this alive.
Jack and Tony are forced to bury the terrified Renee.
The following takes place between 1 p.m. and 2 p.m.
I want 3 more teams combing the site where Matobo was abducted. Pull them in from regional if you have to. We're going to expand the search. Coordinate with Metro Police to set up a point-by-point grid encompassing a 10-mile radius. And talk with NSA. I want to back all of this up with synchronized satellite sweeps.
I'll do what I can.
What does that mean?
Well, every time I ask for something, they pull that cloak and dagger nonsense. I have to get approval for every little scrap of data.
Janice, this isn't easy for anybody. Just please, make it happen.
Yes, sir.
We know that another attack could be imminent. The only way to stop it is to find Almeida and Bauer and take control of the CIP device. For those of you who haven't heard, Renee Walker was abducted by these people.
Janice looks with concern at the desperate Larry.
We're the only chance she's got. Let's get to work.
Larry crosses to Sean Hillinger.
What do you got?
Audio forensics cleaned up the recording.
Walker is extraneous. Kill her before you get here.
Okay, we'll be with you soon.
Be quick about it. Dubaku's anxious to get his hands on the Prime Minister.
You're calling through it looking for a tag that'll give up their location. So far, nothing.
Is there anybody else you can put on this?
Larry, I don't think it's worth it. There's nothing here.
All right, fine. Help Janice coordinate with NSA.
Sorry about Renee, Larry. She was a good agent.
We don't know that she's dead yet. All right?
Larry looks around as if slightly apologetic for his outburst and then hurries away, shaking his head. Janice looks towards Sean. Bill and Chloe race in the blue van onto the abandoned building site and pull up by the ditch in which Renee is buried.
Are you sure this is it? She's gonna run out of air.
Tony's sitting near the back. Here. I got her, Chloe. I got her.
They dig with their hands.
All right, here she is. Here she is.
Bill tears the polythene from Renee's face. He puts his ear close to her nose and mouth.
She's not breathing. Give me the adrenaline.
Bill pumps with both hands in an effort to restart her heart. Chloe prepares a hypodermic syringe. Bill takes the syringe and injects directly into Renee's heart. Her face remains immobile. Finally, her eyes suddenly open.
You're okay. You're okay.
Who are you?
We're working with Jack. He told us where to find you. It's gonna be okay. Take deep breaths. You're gonna be okay.
The yellow van continues on its way. The Motobos remain in the cage.
We're close to the rendezvous point. What's your ETA? Good. See you then.
Emerson moves from the cab back into the rear of the van where Jack and Tony sit looking somber.
It's all set. Nichols is on his way with the diamonds.
Jack looks steadily at Emerson as the latter loads his pistol.
Something bothering you, Jack?
Jack and Tony exchange a glance.
You know, I was wondering why you never told Tony how you got him out of CTU.
How did you do it?
Christopher Henderson.
Christopher Henderson tried to kill him.
Henderson had no intention of killing Tony. He purposely missed the artery when he injected it. It was just enough to slow his heart to the point where you'd think that he was dead. My job was to extract him, revive him, and use him against you. By the time I stabilized him, you'd already killed Henderson. Mission had failed. So my team went dark.
Why did you just let Tony go?
Tony chose to stay with us.
Jack looks sidelong at Tony, who sits looking remorseful.
He was consumed with hatred and anger over what the government had done to Michelle. Anyway, I talked to him. More importantly, I listened to him. Soon you came to realize that I was right.
About what?
That the rules had changed. And there was nothing such as honor left. That we would have to take care of each other. Like brothers.
Mr. Emerson.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
How's the deal gonna go down?
Don't worry, Jack. You're about to find out.
Emerson moves back into the cab alongside Litvak. The van pulls onto a wide apron of weed-strewn concrete in front of a large hangar-type building. Emerson looks quietly pleased. Tony and Jack sit tensely in the rear of the van.
Are you ready?
Emerson appears thoughtful. The van passes through a gap between a vast pair of sliding doors. 108. Inside the hangar, there is parked a Porsche and a pair of high-powered motorbikes. Litvak parks up. Emerson and Tony get out.
I'll help Litvak with the door. Go get the Motobos.
Tony walks off towards Litvak. Emerson follows Jack, then grabs him, holding a gun to his head. Tony shoots Litvak.
You better tell me what the hell's going on.
Drop the gun, David.
I just couldn't figure out your play, so I tried to give you some time so you'd come clean, because we are like brothers. Right, Tony?
Put the gun down, David.
You actually think that I would let you steal those diamonds from me?
It's not about the diamonds. It's about killing innocent people. I can't let you finish this.
Take the shot.
Put down the weapon or I will kill him.
Tony, take the shot.
Shut up, Jack.
Put it down, Tony.
David, I don't want to kill you, but I will.
Tony, drop the...
Tony shoots Emerson in the shoulder. Emerson staggers, looking outraged, then aims at Tony. Jack manages to shoot Emerson, who falls to his knees, bleeding profusely from the throat.
You okay?
Yeah.
Come on.
Jack walks cautiously across to Litvak, kicking the man's gun away and checking that he is dead. He looks out through the hangar doors. End of part one.
Okay, he's saved. The Bower and Almeida are working undercover, but CTU has been shut down, so, I mean, if you're telling the truth, who's running this operation?
We are. We're not working with any agency. We believe there's been widespread infiltration of the government by Dubako and the Juma regime.
Okay. I need to contact my boss. He needs to know that I'm okay.
You can't do that.
Why not?
Dubako has informants in the FBI. If they find out you're alive, they'll know Jack is working against them. You don't know who you can trust.
I can trust Agent Moss.
You're not listening to me. You cannot contact the FBI. You will jeopardize this operation, and I won't let you do that.
Well, I don't work for you. I work for Larry. Now give me a phone.
Sit still, please.
We're nearing the end game. Dubako is the key to finding out who in the government has been corrupted. Luckily, we have something he wants.
Matobo.
It's our best chance to locate Dubako, reacquire the CIP module, and get to the bottom of the government corruption. Until all that happens, you have to stay dead. Yeah?
Did you find Agent Walker?
Yeah, we got her, Jack. She's fine. Where are you?
Northwoods airfield. Litvak is dead. Emerson's been wounded. Nichols is en route. I need you to get over here now.
Have you talked to Matobo?
Not yet.
He needs to agree to this, Jack. We can't do it without him.
I'll get him to agree. Just get over here.
111. Jack looks to where Tony tends to Emerson. He opens the rear doors of the van.
It's all right. What the hell is going on?
Mr. Matobo, I'm not going to hurt you or your wife. I know how scared you are, and I know what you've been through, but we are here to help you.
What in God's name are you talking about? You kidnapped us.
We had to gain Dubaku's trust. That's the man we're after. We're trying to stop him.
I want to call my people.
I can't let you do that, not until you hear me out. Sir, we have a plan to stop Dubaku, but we can't do it without your help. We don't have much time. Please, come with me.
Mr. Dubaku. I'm heading to the meeting place. They're bringing Matobo now.
And his wife?
Both of them.
Once you have Matobo, you know what to do. Emerson's team is now loose and tie it off.
Are you sure about this? We may need their services again.
I would rather keep my diamonds. And Almeida has proved to be a liability. So, any response from the White House?
Not the one we wanted. American forces are still in position.
President Taylor must know we have Matobo. She can't attack Sangala without him. The country would collapse.
Taylor may be holding out hope that she can somehow retrieve Matobo.
Or she doesn't believe we are willing to carry out our threat. She will only respond when there are dead Americans.
I'll call you when I have Matobo. These gentlemen are at your command.
Dubaku crosses to where a man sits wearing a headset and studying a complex of screens.
There are still 1,300 planes in the air. Which region do you want targeted?
Washington, D.C.
The screen zooms in on the Washington area as Dubaku looks coldly on. 113. 118. President Taylor talks on the Oval Office phone.
Yeah. I understand, Bob. All right, thanks. That was Bob Cornell at NSA. They've detected another firewall breach.
There's been another attack?
Not yet, but they believe the CIP device is being utilized. You have to assume Dubaku is initiating another attack. And it's safe to say this won't be another warning shot. This time, Dubaku's going to make sure the people die. I want to speak personally with all first responders across the country. They need to know to brace for the worst and that they have our full support.
Instead of preparing for it, maybe we should be trying to preempt this attack, Madam President. The deadline Dubaku gave us for withdrawing our troops from Sangala has passed. But if we made some kind of gesture, began an immediate pullback, it might keep Dubaku from pulling the trigger.
We've discussed this, Ethan. It's not an option. I won't be dictated to by this madman.
Madam President, we can't invade Sangala without Motobo. And there's very little chance of him being recovered. Why are we risking American lives?
I've told you my reasons.
I implore you, withdraw our forces before it's too late. You asked me to be your advisor because you trust my opinion. Well, I'm giving it to you now. We're out of options.
We're not, Ethan. The NSA is attempting to localize what part of the infrastructure is being targeted. And the FBI is still trying to track down the CIP device.
I'll keep an open channel with both agencies. I'll keep you apprised.
Good.
Taylor watches Kanan leave, then leans worriedly forward onto the desk, clasping her hands together. 1:20, Tony Almeida inspects Emerson's wounds.
Let me see it. This wasn't about the diamonds, David. You crossed the line I wasn't willing to cross. Sorry.
You're looking for forgiveness. Go to hell. You live with it.
You're asking us to risk our lives, to be delivered into Dubaku's hands, based on nothing but what you have told us.
Everything I have told you is the truth. Dubaku is in this country, and we need to find him. You have as much at stake as we do. He's attacked both our countries.
Listen to him, Ule. You told me yourself President Taylor will not commit forces to Sangala until these attacks are stopped.
But how can we trust this man?
Because he has no reason to lie.
Motobo considers his wife's insight and then looks towards Jack's open face.
I will do what you ask, but I will go alone.
Dubaku wants you and your wife, that's the deal.
No, I will not put my wife in the hands of that monster.
I will be honest with you, sir. He wants your wife as leverage. If I don't deliver both of you, he will back out.
Leverage? You mean he wants to torture her to make me tell him what I know about your resistance in Sangala?
Yes, sir. And we won't let that happen. We'll be following you.
Still, you can promise me that you won't be harmed, can you? Can you?
Jack looks down.
I won't do it.
May I speak with my husband?
Of course, ma'am.
I want to do this, Ule.
What?
I am ashamed that I opened the door to this safe room. I want to do what is right for our country.
Absolutely not.
You can't stop me, Ule. Sangala is my country, too. I have been by your side for 22 years. I am not going to leave it now.
Motobo attempts resistance, but finally has to relent. He looks back towards where Jack has withdrawn.
Mr. Bauer? We will do this together.
Thank you. You are both very brave. We'll need to go soon. Excuse me for one moment.
Jack walks away, leaving the Motobos looking grave and thoughtful. He walks around to the other side of the van where Tony sits by Emerson.
Tony, the Motobos are going to work with us. We've got to go.
Emerson lies dead. Tony appears devastated.
Tony.
Tony stands wearily and then turns to Jack.
Let's get the bodies out of sight.
Yeah.
Tony hangs his head slightly as he watches Jack move away.
We're locked onto the FAA note.
Begin rerouting the targets.
RSA 471, turn right heading 274. Descend and maintain flight level 270.
Holy White House.
The flight paths of two planes are altered to collision course. 1:24, in the Oval Office.
The latest report from the NSA. I can summarize it for you.
Go ahead.
They've had no luck in localizing the firewall breach. Dubaku's attack could hit anywhere.
What about the FBI?
They've dedicated every available agent to the manhunt for Motobo. They're no closer to finding him.
Excuse me.
Tim Woods withdraws to take his call.
We're at a dead end, Madam President. You need to order the pullback, and you need to order it now.
Can it be traced? Hold on. Madam President.
What is it, Tim?
I've just been forwarded a scrambled call. It's from Colonel Dubaku. He's demanding to speak with you.
I'll take it. This is President Taylor.
Madam President, I'm disappointed that you have not taken my demands seriously. Your forces are still in position near my country.
Colonel Dubaku, I assure you we've had very serious discussions regarding your demands.
The time for discussions is over. The deadline for your forces to begin their withdrawal has passed. Go to the window. Look to the southwest, Madam President.
What?
See what you have done.
Colonel Dubaku, if you're endangering one American life...
Oh, my God.
Go, Madam President.
Kanan has pulled back the curtain and looks out. The president comes to stand next to him and stares in horror at a starburst of orange fire in the sky.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Comply with my demands within the hour, or 10,000 more Americans will die.
Wreckage from the two planes falls to earth in tentacles of smoke emanating from the grey cloud of the epicenter. Woods holds his head in his hands. Kanan continues to stare out aghast. Taylor stares likewise and then drops her gaze. She turns back into the room, swallowing with difficulty, her expression frozen by shock and horror.
Is the cabinet still assembled?
Yes, Madam President.
Taylor turns to Kanan, but seems unable to hold his gaze. She turns and walks towards the door. One 26. End of part 2. Emergency services are on the scene of the disaster. President Taylor enters the cabinet room.
Flight 131 out of Chicago, 240 passengers, 10 crew members. They collided with a small commuter jet carrying 21 people. There's also a high probability of casualties on the ground. The aircraft went down in a residential neighborhood near Edgeboro.
An aide hands Woods a note.
Thank you.
Woods absorbs the contents and then turns to Taylor.
We've also just gotten word that Congressman Brighton and his wife may have been on 131. We're waiting for confirmation.
How many planes are still in the air?
Over 1,300.
Madam President, this is a catastrophic loss of American lives. It's only going to get worse. We have to withdraw our forces before the next deadline.
I'm forced to agree, Madam President.
Taylor deliberates, then sits at the cabinet table.
Go ahead, Tim. I want to hear what you think.
We're simply not prepared to contend with the scope of damage these people can inflict. The tragedy we just witnessed is nothing compared to what could happen if they begin targeting more sensitive installations, power grids, nuclear facilities. We're talking deaths in the hundreds of thousands.
All in support of a policy that cannot possibly succeed without Motobo. He is the only man who can stabilize Sangala. Without him, the entire operation is pointless.
All the officials around the table, including Woods and Kanan, seem to hold their breath and look towards Taylor.
There's still a chance that Prime Minister Motobo will be recovered. And while that chance exists, I'm not giving in. Admiral Smith, your strike force will remain in position and at full battle readiness.
Yes, Madam President.
Madam President, you are guaranteeing another attack on our country.
We will not be blackmailed, Joe, and we will not be held hostage. This country does not negotiate with terrorists.
Tell that to the families of the dead. Do you have any idea what the public reaction will be when word gets out that these are acts of terrorism? Brought about by your reckless foreign policy, I can guarantee there will be a call for your impeachment.
That's enough, Joe.
I will not stand by and let this happen.
Then turn in your resignation, Joe, because I'm not changing my mind. Now sit down or leave.
Stevens remains standing under the intent gaze of both the president and of Kanan. He shakes his head and gathers his papers together.
I'm sorry, Madam President. You people think about what you're doing here. About the price you're willing to pay.
Stevens leaves. Taylor steadies herself. The rest of the assembly shift nervously. Taylor emerges from her reverie and addresses the room.
Gentlemen, ladies, I know that there are many of you here who agree with Secretary Stevens. If I can alleviate your doubts, I can at least help you to understand my reasonings. When I took the oath of office, I swore to myself and to the American people that this country would continue to be a force for good in this world. We're a nation founded on ideals. And those ideals are being challenged today. Now, how we respond will not only define this administration, but an entire generation. And not just Americans, but Sangalans and anyone else who looks to us for guidance and strength. I won't fail them. And neither will you. We're in for some tough times ahead. Let's make sure we're ready.
All look at her gravely. She seems to take heart from her own speech and rises resolutely.
Thank you, everyone.
As the president turns to leave, Ethan Kanan watches her go with the merest hint of a raised eyebrow. Taylor passes through the corridor and back into her office. The brave face she had on for the benefit of the cabinet seems to fall away somewhat now that she is alone. She leans against a wall and stares ahead. 136. 140.
Rescue teams continue at this time.
Bill drives the blue van across the concrete apron in front of the hangar. Jack emerges from the doorway and beckons the van inside. The Matobos look on as Jack flags the van to a halt inside the hangar. Bill gets out, and then Chloe.
Hey, Jack.
They're over there. I want you to put a wire on Mr. Matobo as fast as you can. Go.
Renee gets out from the back of the van. She looks at Jack as one might at a poisonous insect.
You okay?
What do you think, Jack? He shot me and buried me alive.
If we hadn't, Emerson would have killed you. I'm sorry we had to keep you in the dark, but we didn't have a choice.
Yes, you did. You could have trusted me.
If I had told you everything back at the FBI, would you have believed me?
She watches him go, seemingly reflecting on the validity of what he has just said. Chloe pulls on latex gloves. The Matobos look on uncertainly.
Have a seat, please, sir.
Matobo sits and looks on somewhat diffidently as Chloe sorts out equipment from a metal case. She draws closer, holding a small white object in a pair of tweezers.
What's that?
It's a transmitter. I'll be affixing it to one of your teeth. We'll know exactly where you are at all times. You won't be alone.
Are you with the FBI?
No, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Open your mouth, please. Wider. Good.
Chloe accessed the FBI server. Dubaku brought down two planes just outside the Capitol. Over 270 people were killed. He's threatened to kill 10,000 more. We have less than an hour to stop him.
How long before Nichols gets here?
10 minutes.
Here's your comm.
Jack hefts a fearsome sniper rifle onto his shoulder and screws a miniature comms unit into his ear. He turns to where Renee is standing close by.
All right.
Just a little dizzy.
You should take a seat.
Fine.
Hey, come on. Take a seat.
He sits her in the rear of the van.
Is all this really true?
Yeah.
I've devoted my life to the Bureau, and you just expect me to believe that it's corrupted, that the entire government's been corrupted?
Not all of them. But until we find out who, we can't trust anyone.
And the four of you really think you can stop this?
We have to. It's as simple as that.
She blinks. In the cabinet room.
Ethan. Can we?
1:43. Kanan follows Woods.
The president is completely alone on this, and she's going to get a lot of Americans killed. We've got to find a way to talk some sense into her.
We're both on the same side here, Tim. And I'm going to need your help if we're going to change her mind.
How do you propose we do that?
There is someone she'll listen to. Maybe we can convince him to help us.
Henry Taylor sits motionless on the sofa in Sam's apartment. Only his eyes shift, following the movements of Agent Gedge, who stalks around the flat, sleeves encased in polythene covers, and clutching the deadly chef's knife still. Gedge rips out and cuts cable. In the street outside, Agent Foster pulls up. Sam gets out of the car and crosses towards her building. Foster pulls out his phone and dials. Gedge surveys the internal balcony as if calculating the drop and coils cable around his arm. He takes the call.
Go ahead.
I just dropped her off. She's on her way up.
Okay, stay in the car and keep watch. Call you when it's done.
Gedge returns intently to his work. Taylor looks on in frozen horror. Sam emerges from the lift. She passes along the corridor. 1:45. Taking the key from beneath the mat, she opens the door of the apartment and enters. Taylor looks on as if desperately trying to scream a warning. Sam enters, taking off her jacket and checking her post. She walks further into the flat, still failing to notice Henry. Taylor's eyelids flicker. Sam suddenly stops in her tracks.
Oh, Mr. Taylor, how did you get in here? The agent you sent just brought me by to get a few of my things before we... Mr. Taylor, are you all right? Mr. Taylor, are you okay?
Gedge steals up behind her with the knife.
Mr. Taylor, unless you tell me what's wrong, I don't know what...
Taylor can only watch as Gedge flips Samantha onto her back and prepares to stab her with seeming relish in the heart. Gedge pulls out his phone, checks the caller ID, and nervously answers.
Yes, Mr. Kane.
Agent Gedge, I'm looking for Henry Taylor. He's not answering his phone. Is he with you?
You can't talk with him right now, sir.
Why not? Where is he?
Well, he's meeting with Samantha Roth in her apartment, sir.
For what possible reason?
Well, I don't know, sir. He didn't tell me.
Why aren't you with him?
Mr. Taylor insisted on meeting with her alone, sir. I'm in the car. I'm just outside the building.
I don't give a damn what he insisted. We went through this, Agent Gedge. You were supposed to keep him away from her. What the hell were you thinking?
I'm sorry, sir.
I'm not interested in your apology. Just pull him out of there and have him phone me as soon as possible.
Henry Taylor stares as Gedge hangs up and crosses to pull the knife out of Sam's inert body. He breathes out as if innocently surprised at how tiring it all is and comes over to kneel by Henry, placing the knife in his hand and folding Taylor's fingers around the handle.
try to speak, sir. There's nothing left to say.
Gedge carefully extricates the knife from Taylor's hand and goes back to where Sam lies dead. Taylor stares at his own hand, his eyes widening as he realizes he has regained the power to make a fist. He flashes a look across to Gedge. 148, end of part 3.
Additional rescue teams have been brought in to join.
Wife sit in the cage in the van.
Are you ready?
Alright.
Tony shuts the cage and then closes the rear doors of the van. Bill watches through a window as a vehicle approaches.
They're coming. One car from the service road.
How many people?
I can't tell. The windows are tinted.
Copy that.
Bill's van is parked out of sight. In the rear sit Renee and Chloe, who works at the screen of a laptop. Tony turns as into the hangar drives a large black luxury Jeep. Nichols gets out, along with several other men.
How you doing, Tony?
All right.
Glad to hear you're still with us. Where's Emerson?
You're not going to be dealing with him today.
What do you mean?
He's dead. So is Litvak and Bauer. I got him in a back room. You want to say hi?
You better start telling me what the hell is going on.
I decided I'd rather not split the cut.
Well, I don't understand. I thought you and Emerson were friends.
Yeah, that was before he left me to rot with the FBI. You want Matobo or not?
Where is he?
Close.
I want to see him. And his wife.
Diamonds.
Nichols turns unwillingly to one of his henchmen, who steps forward and opens up a metal case on the bonnet of the Jeep. 154. Tony crosses to the Jeep, opens the neck of a black velvet bag within the case, and tips out a fat handful of sizable diamonds. Taking a small lens, he holds one of the stones to the light and examines it.
Matobo! It's in the back of the truck.
Tony tosses keys to another of Nichols' men, who goes over to the van and unlocks the rear doors. Tony turns to watch as the man pulls the Matobos out from the cage.
Keep your tracks clean. We might call on you again.
Nichols nods to a man standing behind Tony, who draws his pistol, only to be felled by Jack. Tony and Jack win out. Nichols holds out his pistol in surrender. Matobo comforts his wife. Jack, in the rafters, keeps his rifle trained on the scene. Tony takes Nichols' gun.
Okay, then. Let's put that behind us. You got what you want? Now get the hell out of here. Now!
Nichols and his sole remaining bodyguard scuttle away. They take charge of the Matobos and load them into the rear of the Jeep. Tony looks up to where Jack still covers them with his rifle. Nichols throws Tony a bitter look as the driver reverses the Jeep back and then pulls away through the gap in the sliding doors. 156. Bill observes the Jeep driving away.
Clear. Chloe.
Jack, I got it.
Get everyone ready to move out.
In Sam's apartment, her body lies in a spreading pool of blood. Gedge drags Henry Taylor along the balcony overlooking the main room. He arranges Taylor in a chair and, locating a suitable metal rafter, prepares to loop his length of electric cable over it. The cable now in place, he goes to tie off the other end. Taylor looks down at his hands. By means of what appears to be a superhuman effort, he succeeds in bunching both of them into fists. Gedge continues tying off the cable.
Gedge. Don't do this.
Taylor looks on in horror as Gedge continues busily working. He now finishes tying a noose in the hanging end of the cable.
Please.
Gedge hoists Taylor to his feet and leans him against the balustrade in preparation for placing the noose around his neck. Taylor grabs Gedge's throat with both hands. They struggle. They topple over the balustrade, crashing down onto a table. Gedge, who took the worst of the impact, feebly reaches for Taylor's hands as the life seems to ebb from his eyes. Taylor realizes that Gedge is no longer resisting at all and pulls his hands away from the throat of the sinister young man. He rolls away, his expression a potent mix of horror and relief.
There has been no comment from the White House, but the incident's proximity to the executive mansion has led to widespread speculation that terrorists were indeed responsible for the mid-air collision that caused the deaths of 270 passengers and crew and an unknown number.
The White House still has not complied. American forces are still in position. I think this president is not just stubborn. She's insane.
What do you intend to do?
Exactly what we promised.
We're ready, sir.
I'll see you in a moment.
Dubaku addresses the screen.
Where is the target located?
Kidron, Ohio.
Population?
30,000. The processing facility is located 2 miles west of the town center. Casualties will be high, about 18,000.
Begin.
2 p.m. The end.